Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Well, he also posted that he was distracted by the Tates, the Tate brothers.
Yeah, I don't feel like getting into that.
Okay. Yes. Obviously, Hans announced first that the tournament is not happening because of contractual disputes. Then Vadim confirmed that to everybody on Twitter. Tournament is not happening. Oh, by the way, this is actually, I want to talk to you about that. I was researching undetectable smart AR glasses. Ways to cheat.
Augmented reality?
Yes.
Okay.
Where you could see like stuff in your on your lens.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't find any, but I'm sure they exist.
If you want to cheat, I think there's easier ways than smart glasses.
Welcome back, everybody, to another C-Squared podcast episode. We are in a very warm park in Romania, sometimes during the rest day at the Superbet Chess Classic. Five rounds already played. Fabi, things are looking pretty good so far, very similar to what was happening last year, plus two so far. How would you assess your play so far?
There's a bird also.
Yes, but the people, I don't think, can see the pigeon. But there is a
pigeon. That's why I'm telling them about it. So there's a pigeon. Okay, it's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah, the play...
You intimidated the pigeon.
No, I didn't. It's not my fault. Yeah, the play so far is good. I had a win against Wesley. I mean, I should have won. I had what was a winning position. It was like a decent game before that. And then, okay, he made some very uncharacteristic mistakes. And then I was winning. And then he made a very good practical move, queen e4, which gave me a choice. And the reason I made my choice was maybe partly influenced by the time control, which is like you start with 2 hours and then you don't get second time control. And I had maybe 15 or maybe 20 minutes at that time after queen e4. So I had a choice. Do I trade queens, mm-hmm. which is what I did, and go to an endgame, which looks winning, but... You know, it's not winning on the spot, so it's one of those wins that it'll take a while. And the other choice was, do I sack my a4 pawn and go for the attack? And I saw a line like rook e3, queen takes a4, queen d3, king h7 is the only move. And then I couldn't like see a clear knockout here, and I was like, okay, if I spent a bit of time on that, I was like, if I don't see a clear knockout, do I really want to give a pawn? I have like a very strong feeling that this is completely winning, and mm-hmm. maybe in more than one way. Mm-hmm. But if I don't see a clear continuation, should I do it? I hesitated. I decided to go the safe route. It was a very bad practical decision. There was a clear win there. I just had to see one more move. F4, I would have convinced me if I had seen that, because that's just game over. But I decided not to go for that. I went for an endgame, which is winning. But it's not like... It takes a long time to win this, unless black...
It's one of those tricky endgames, right? The engine says plus two or something like that, but it's... Practically, it's not easy at all.
Yeah, I had a feeling it would be tricky because my bishop on a3 is really out of the game. And I once had this game against Ali Reza from the Grand Swiss. It's like I had these passed pawns mm-hmm. on the king side that were rolling down the board, but at some point they stop rolling mm-hmm. and then they need some assistance, which can be very concrete to actually get them to, you know, to get to the sixth rank. And otherwise they get blockaded, which is sort of what happened. Like I got them to the fifth rank. And then they get blockaded. So, yeah, it was winning, but it wasn't so easy at some moment. And then I panicked a bit once he played knight c6. This was the last winning moment I had.
When you could play knight d6, right?
No, my knight was on d6.
And you played knight c4 or knight
b5. Knight b5, yeah. I just wanted to stop knight d4. It was a bad move. If I had played rook e3, and then if I had seen this g4 idea, I would have won, most likely. But I didn't see it. I didn't see the g4 idea.
Yeah.
And then there was nothing else really to do at that point. So that was a missed win, but I played a good game against Dayak. I beat Ali Reza in...
What about that one, actually, the Ali Reza game? That was round one.
against Audio Reza.
Yeah, yeah, that was important because I was very depressed out of the opening. Such a bad position. I was like, first round already, I have a terrible position. What am I doing with this opening? Why am I making these moves? D6, just like hesitating a lot too. At some point, I just thought, okay, my position sucks, so I'll just start making moves and not really thinking about the consequences too much. So I played C5. I was like, okay, I'll close the position. At least I won't get run over on the queen side. And hopefully it works out. I mean, of course, it's clearly bad, but I thought, yeah, sometimes these King's Indian positions are hard to keep control of. But he really should have played A4.
Yeah, A4.
And, just keep control. Like, we discussed after the game a little bit. He wasn't really upset, it seemed.
He's in a good mood.
His first comment was literally like, he just smiled and he was like, I played so bad. And, yeah.
We have some crying kids around here.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not going to be too distracting. Yeah, well, he also posted that he was distracted by the Tates, the Tate brothers.
Yeah, I don't feel like getting into that.
Okay. Yes. Anyway, he seems to be in a good mood. He's here, I think, with his significant other. I don't think his dad is here. I haven't seen his dad.
Yeah, I haven't either.
And he's always with him.
No, in Norway, his father wasn't there, as far as I know.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, Alireza, he did strike back immediately. The next day, he beat Noderbeck. And, yeah, there's some players who are in decent shape, it seems, like Gukesh plus one, Prague plus one, but actually Prague could have been plus three if he had taken them all his chances. Because he had a win against Gukesh in a pawn endgame, and I don't know, I don't think it was very difficult.
Uh-huh.
Basically, the entire line was like, okay, he has doubled F-pawns and an H-pawn against G and H-pawns. So it's very simple.
H3, H5, H4 check.
Well, he didn't play H5.
Right. But if he plays H5, the winning line is what?
Yeah, so H4.
Uh-huh.
So now you want to go to G6.
Yes, King
F4. Because King F4, King F6. So white doesn't play King F4, white plays King E3.
Sure.
And now if King G7, King F3, black is not making progress because King F6 is always met with King F4. So black should play F6 with, for example, the king on G7.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say King F4, King G6. King goes back somewhere, King F7. Let's say King E3, King E7. King F3, King D6. King F4, King E6. So we get this position.
Yeah.
And now white plays King F3.
Yes.
So after King E5, King E3, there's the opposition. And maybe you could stop at this moment and like be a little bit unsure how to proceed if you have a minute on the clock. If you get to this moment, you like immediately see F4, GF, King D5.
Yeah.
King goes to D5, that's not so F5. Nice. Because now if King D3, F5 gets the opposition for black, black has the extra tempo. And if King F3, black plays actually probably everything.
F5.
King, yeah. King D4 is probably easiest, F5, yeah, whatever. And white will lose the F-pawn. And the other problem for white is, like, sometimes these positions can be a little bit tricky if white's pawn is on H2, but the pawn's on H4, so it just falls on H4 as well. If it's on H2, I mean, it's winning, but sometimes it's a bit tricky.
I think both players were about 1 minute left on the clock. Obviously, Gukesh was playing on his increment for quite a while, so he was under pressure. Prague sensed the moment, entered this line, rook f5.
But this is clear, because otherwise...
failed, yeah, to...
Like, rook f5, maybe you're not sure it's winning, but it's like 50-50, and otherwise...
Exchange the queens and queen and rook f5.
Otherwise, you understand that it's just... I was very surprised Gukesh went for it. Otherwise, you understand it's just probably a draw with some suffering, but should be a draw. And the pawn endgame, even if you're not sure it's winning, it's definitely very close.
Yeah.
So... that was a miss, and then against Wesley yesterday, he wasn't better a single move of the game, and then suddenly he was just winning on the spot with queen a7.
Yeah, that was crazy, actually.
But he probably just didn't, like, it's one of those moments where you're not better the whole game, and then you don't really think of, like, suddenly I'm winning, right? If someone had told him, you're winning here, he would have probably stopped to think and just found it.
It was completely mutual blind spot.
Yeah.
Both him and Wesley didn't spot it, and I showed him during the interview, and he was completely shocked. Like, he didn't hear about it. Nobody told him about it.
Well, the players just go straight to the... Yeah.
Not so much. Not so much. The players are not very good with that, actually.
Okay. I mean, usually there's, like, a crowd of people asking for autographs, but then, yeah, at least I can only speak from my experience.
Yeah, you're good.
And, yeah, so he had his chances. Gukesh, there's a bunch of people who have their chances to win the tournament, for sure. The players who are struggling, Dayak, Anish, Noderbeck, all on minus score. Going to be tough for them. I would never count someone out on minus one to still fight for the first place, but it's going to be tough. Yeah, that's about it for the tournament so far.
Well, also your game against Dayak, I think that was quite important because, I mean, you had white, you were supposed, and people were expecting that you were going to put pressure, but out of the first four encounters with him, you never scored a win against him. So he was a very difficult nut crack for you.
But yeah, we had four draws before that. Well, the thing is, a lot really depends on if you get a fight in the opening.
Yeah.
Because he is a player who can play at a very high level. So if you're getting a position where he's pretty comfortable, it's going to be really hard to create chances. I mean, in the Grand Swiss, he knew the line really well. He even got an advantage. And then I equalized eventually. I survived, but that was the extent of the game. And so this game, I caught him in a line which he didn't know. It's not like I got a huge advantage, but he didn't know it too well. And that was already enough to get some play going, and then he was under pressure, and it was a good game.
There's also the time control that really doesn't favor him. He usually relies on that second time control, just to kind of relax, get back, you know, into play mode. But right now he's usually, for the last 2-3 hours, okay, that's an exaggeration, maybe like an hour and a half, the last hour and a half of the game, he's in time trouble.
Yeah.
He never gets out of it.
He also has this really weird habit, which people I'm sure have noticed, where he has like 30 seconds on the clock, he just gets up from the board.
Yes.
I haven't seen anyone.
Nobody.
Anyone. It's
nobody
so
does
unusual.
That.
It's actually nuts. I mean, I understand that he's thinking about the position away from the board, but still, it costs you like 10 seconds to just get up and down, and that's a third of your time. I mean, it very often, like, I wouldn't be able to do that. I would get down to the board, I still need a few seconds to readjust, I have no time left, I panic or something. Like, I need to be fully concentrated at the board if I'm down to my last seconds to keep some control, I mean, if it's possible. So, I mean, he has his...
That's his thing.
Yeah, that's his thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's been doing it for a while. Definitely in the last few years when I got to notice him during Grand Chess Tour, but I think he was doing it before that as well. I think he's just... It's his thing. But still, I mean, only minus one could have been much worse for him. So...
He's only minus one?
Is he minus one?
Minus two. He lost to Gukesh in the first round.
Oh, yes. Yes, you're right.
Which he was actually winning that game, in the middle game.
Yeah.
He had a winning move. So that was a pretty up and down game.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been like a lot of draws, but that's what you expect sometimes, you know, from these tournaments. Like a lot of times people complain, but I was thinking about my game against Noderbeck. Yeah, it's a draw. Neither of us had like real winning chances, but it was a very interesting game, relatively well played. And yeah, if you don't like that there's no huge drama at the end of the game, I understand. I also want to see like the action and the time trouble and all that, but. But from a pure like enjoyment of chess point of view, there is something to enjoy in a game like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or in a game like Maxime against Noderbeck, also a draw, but just a completely crazy game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I didn't understand what was happening, right? It's you know, white is playing a4, b takes a4, and then doesn't even recapture, plays queen g3. Okay, I kind of understand, and then suddenly doesn't play rook a4 the next move, plays rook takes rook a3.
By the way, queen c8 was a very good move by Maxime.
Yeah.
Just to get him out of his prep.
Because
that was his prep. Basically.
Yeah, yeah. That was after up to queen g3, he was playing instantly. So it's clearly his prep. And then after that, he started to think. A game like that ends in a draw. Some people won't like it. But there's something to be valued in that as well.
Purity of classical chess.
Yeah. No, but it's like, okay, it really depends. Like, do you watch chess because you like the game? Or do you watch chess because you like the sport of it?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
it's a bit different. Do you like to analyze chess? People who like to analyze chess, they'll probably be interested in that. People who just like to watch chess, which is also totally legitimate, who want to like watch people in time trouble or the sporting aspect of it. Like, if I watch tennis, I'm not going to analyze everything. I just watch tennis to watch tennis. I don't really care about any of the technical stuff, right?
Right.
So that's just a different approach. But yeah, they both have their place, I guess. Although one is clearly more popular than the other.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. I think Gary called this time control a modern opera. You still maintain, you know, that purity of high-level classical chess, but you also get down to the last few seconds and the craziness that comes with it. So,
well, yeah, the only difference with like the normal, like it's a nice 90-30 plus 30 after move 40 is that you get all the time at once, so you just decide how you distribute it.
Yeah.
Which you could say is just like you need to manage your time better, because one way forces you to manage your time better, because they only give you the time after 40, so then you have to. But you can do it, you can approach it as like a 90-30. You can say, I have an hour and a half.
But nobody does that.
I understand, but
I think
can
it's
do
impossible
that.
To do that.
But you can do that.
You can technically, but I think it's impossible to do that.
Yeah,
because you're just going to spend more time on decisions that you deem necessary or like important.
Sure.
And then you're going to get down to your last few
but
seconds.
But how do you know what's necessary? How do you know what's important?
When we get more time, we attribute it
as important, yeah?
As important. Yeah.
So it's not. Yeah. We don't know what will be important or not. We just decide, I have time, so I'll spend it. That's what people do, which is a natural thing to do. But
I've actually never wondered how they used to play back in the days. Okay, Germans is one thing, but I'm pretty sure there was a time in history when they were not even playing with the clock.
Yeah, yeah. That was just like gentlemen's agreement.
How much can you think?
Yeah, you can think as long as you want, I guess, but at some point, probably you should make a move or... I don't know, your opponent complains.
Clock, come on, make a move. Like in poker, yeah?
In poker...
You don't have to.
You're expected... Well, they can call the clock.
They call the clock, yeah.
But you're expected not to tank forever, I guess. Unless it's, like, clearly a very crucial decision.
A lot of money at stake, crucial decision. Yeah, no. Good first half so far. Definitely couldn't expect better. Let's just put it that way. First place, Seoul first place. Good start. Lyon, Vichy, Eredivisie.
Yeah.
Who else?
Santos Latassa and Veselin Topalov.
And Toba.
So two world champions. The number one ranked player in India, I believe.
Yes.
And, well, that's very close. And one of the strongest players in Spain who always plays in Lyon. I guess he's... from there, I'm not 100% sure, but he always plays there.
And he does quite well, generally, when he plays there. Now, Vichy was here in Bucharest at the beginning. Vichy was here before the tournament as well. He was, in fact, with his second for this particular tournament. I don't know if they work on a regular basis. I don't know if Vichy works on a regular basis, but he was taking this tournament seriously. Like, he was actually training Rapid and Blitz. He was playing Rapid and Blitz with his second. I don't know if we should mention it, but I don't think he cares too much. It was Jordan.
Yeah, I didn't really know about this either. So I had this discussion with my coach recently, like longevity. Who are the top players who were like top players into their 60s?
Mm-hmm.
Who would you name off the top of your head?
In their 60s?
And one is very obvious.
I don't know, Gary?
Gary?
Not really.
He's in his 60s now. I mean, he retired from chess in 2005, and he was born in 1963, so...
I don't know. Which one is obvious?
Well, I mean, Korchnoi is obvious.
Okay, yeah, Korchnoi, of course.
And because Korchnoi was born in 1931...
Of course.
And he was, for example, top 20 in the world even in 1999.
Yes.
I believe. Maybe even early 2000s.
But outside of Korchnoi, who else? Ooh.
Another bird came very aggressively. And left. So the other one also like played a candidates match in his 60s against Smyslov.
Smyslov, okay.
And he played against Gary, I think, in candidates final in 1983 or two. I forget exactly.
Do you think that's still possible? I don't think that's still possible.
Well, there's Vichy. That's what I'm saying.
But Vichy doesn't play, right?
But he can play very well. Now, he doesn't play much these days, but he can play very well.
He can play very well, yes.
Like, if you have, like, Zagreb tournament, well, we do, in next week, but let's say Vichy was playing there. I wouldn't expect Vichy to win. I also wouldn't expect Vichy to get last place. I would expect him to be somewhere in the middle, which is what you would expect from, let's say, a guy like Anish. So definitely Vichy is going to be, like, one of the top guys.
Right.
Now, will he... be winning super tournaments if he played them regularly?
Would he
not
make the candidates? if he would play regularly.
Okay, but to make the candidates, like, how do you do it?
That's why I'm asking. Yeah, I don't think he would.
You have to be very active as the first thing.
Yes.
So it's very unfavorable to someone who maybe doesn't have the energy of a young guy. But, like, to make the candidates, okay, you have to either get a FIDE circuit spot,
yes,
another FIDE circuit spot, which means you have to play very actively. Yes. Those are regulations, like 7 tournaments. You have to get top 3 in the World Cup, which is a month-long event.
It's, if you're getting top,
it's a month-long event.
That's probably the most difficult way to actually go to the candidates.
Maybe. Maybe, yeah.
Okay, rating spot and whatnot, but rating spot.
Rating spot will
matter.
Get converted to the FIDE circuit, so yeah. Because Magnus is probably going to say no, so it gets converted to FIDE circuit spot, as far as I know. Or there's a Grand Swiss, 2 spots there. Which,
very difficult.
Yeah, like that would probably be his best chance, but that's a crapshoot. It's one event, you know. But still, Vichy is one of those players who has longevity that you could say similar to maybe Korchnoi or Smyslov, maybe not to the same extent, but he's also, I mean, he's born in 1969, he's still not at the age that's like Smyslov was still at the top level.
I think if he plays, he's probably going to continue being in top 20, I want to say. Oh. I don't know if you guys could see that on camera, but we have a buddy that's circling around, trying to get in the shot. Do you like birds?
I like animals in general. I think they're funny, but pigeons are just like the dumbest animals. I don't know. They don't... they're not...
Dumb?
Yeah.
Probably. But they also get scared very easily. If you scare them, they can explode. Did you know that?
Explode?
What does explode mean? As in their heart explodes and they just like poof, they explode.
I don't buy it. I don't believe it.
I'm sorry. I'm pretty sure that's a fact.
I don't believe it, no. I have never seen a pigeon explode.
If you scare them,
yeah,
they explode.
I think they just fly away. Maybe you could give a pigeon a heart attack.
Yes, and that makes them explode.
I mean, probably not.
They go poof. Boom.
But I would be surprised if you could give a pigeon a heart attack.
It's been done, and it hasn't been a very difficult job. Like, basically, you know the pigeons that you launch when you propose or when
doves?
You have like a... Yeah, doves. Pigeons, doves. The same thing, right?
They're not pigeons.
They're the same thing. Doves and pigeons. They're definitely kind of the same thing.
They're birds.
Right. But basically, I've seen them explode.
You've seen a dove explode?
When they hold them like this, just before they launch them, they explode in their hands. I've seen that.
Do they squeeze them too hard?
Maybe. Maybe.
I squeeze this tiny bird really hard and then I say it had a heart attack.
Yes. They get scared and they explode. Anyway, we'll see. Maybe you guys can let us know if that's an actual objective fact.
I don't think so. What were we talking about?
Lyon. Vichy started with a match against Topa. Won. Was it convincing you?
It was 2.5, 1.5.
You were checking the games.
He was better in most of the games, I think. It looked relatively smooth. 2.5, 1.5. Then Arjun lost, surprisingly, to Santos Latasa. Actually, like, the most bizarre way. I don't know if people really followed the match too much, but, like, okay, first game draw. Second game, Arjun wins. Third game, he's black. Very complicated position. At some point, like, Jaime is trying to repeat moves. I don't know why. In a complicated position with the white pieces. Now, if they draw, it's like Arjun just has to draw the fourth game with white to win the match. And the position is complex. It's not like Arjun is better. For some reason, he decided... I mean, it's probably just like optimism of youth and like invincibility of youth and so on. And maybe not thinking too practically. But Arjun decided to like play on for no reason. Like no tournament reason. No position-specific reason. Just he wants to play. He wants to beat him.
Right.
Like very brave.
I mean, maybe he assessed it in his favor.
But even if you assess it in your favor, it's very complex. So, okay, whatever, he plays on, and he loses. And then he is much better in the fourth game, but he misplays it one move, and then he loses as well. It was a surprise upset.
Yeah.
So Santos Latasa took him down. And then Vichy beat him in the final match, and there was no match for third place. So it was a bit of an anticlimax in that sense, but... Okay, it's very deserved for Santos Latasa to fight back in that situation. Vichy, of course, also deserved to win. It was pretty clean. I mean, a two-match event to me is not like some huge, like, it feels a bit short, you know?
Yeah.
It's like semifinals, finals, and no match for third place, and it feels like the start of an event. And then there's like, this is a preliminary phase, and then they have the knockouts, and then they have the 15-minute no increment for $1 million. And which isn't happening.
Nice segue. Speaking of $1 million, obviously Hans announced first that the tournament is not happening because of contractual disputes. Then Vadim confirmed that to everybody on Twitter. Tournament is not happening. Your initial thoughts about that? Are you disappointed?
Of course.
Are you looking forward to that?
No, I mean, like when it first got suggested, well, first, like online, right? I saw it. And then, okay, this is never going to happen. Zero chance.
Right.
And then kind I got invited, and I was like, well, I'll think about it, but like very unlikely that. And then I actually found someone. And then I was like, well, yeah, I can play. And and then I still didn't think it would happen, because at that point it was like, okay, yeah, we, you know, it seems like it's going forward, but still we need to get the contract signed. And then at some point the contracts were all signed, everyone, that's what I heard privately. Everyone agreed, everything's signed, the funds are secured, I heard. And then I was still like, okay, it's not 100%, but everything is moving in this direction, and I don't really know, like, who's sponsoring who from the event. I mean, Hans posted a photo of his sponsor. I wasn't like too surprised that Noderbeck would find some backing, because he does have a sponsor. It is a bank. I don't know if it's that, but it's possible, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he is like a national hero of some sort. And again, like with these sponsors, very often it's going to be some sort of, like in poker, yeah, like a backing, but
like a
yeah.
Could be a friend, could be
no, but like they expect something in return. They're
of
not
course.
Just giving
yeah,
you the
yeah.
money, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the case for me as well. And then yeah, Hans announced like a few days ago that there was some dispute. Again, it wasn't clear exactly what dispute, and that he had some concerns that like the organizers and the players were
colluding.
Yeah, we're like, I don't know, doing something together. I don't know if he like made a specific claim there or just that he was concerned. Which, yeah, again, I don't know what the deals of the other players are, but that wasn't the case for me.
So Vadim was not your sponsor?
No.
Okay.
And then, yeah, that I mean, I understand the concerns. Like, also, he said that the contract wasn't super professionally worded. I think that was what he said, basically. Or I don't know exactly the words he used, but it wasn't like, didn't seem very professional, with like no clause in case someone backs out. But that I'm sort of used to. I think that I, like, there usually aren't. So I once backed out of a tournament, and then I was kind of like, kind of warned, and then I agreed. It was like scheduling conflict. It was like 6 years ago. But there's almost never like a provision in the chess contracts, tournament contracts, that say like we're going to fine you or something. And for the organizer as well, again, I don't know, I haven't been like uninvited from a tournament during, so I haven't had to deal with this, but it can happen. I guess it's just sort of the nature that you're probably not going to have any legal recourse if you suddenly get like, if the tournament, you know, falls apart or you get kicked out for some reason. I haven't really seen that happen, but except in the candidates, obviously, right? With Karjakin, which is a different story entirely. But yeah, he had his concerns. I don't know if they were legitimate, like if he had reason to be concerned or not, but he had his concerns for whatever reason. It fell apart. Vadim responded, but I don't think he like addressed it. I think he just said the tournament's not happening. Which, again, I'm still ready to play. I'm still ready to play.
Whoever plays, right?
Or yeah, I actually didn't really care. I mean, I thought, okay, it's going to be fun if it's Hans, but I really don't care if it's going to be like this super, you know, dramatic event, which, like,
like Magnus or
yeah, I mean
anybody else from the top.
For 10? Me, it was still interesting for the money. That's why I was doing it.
Yeah, it's a fun event.
I wasn't doing it because I want to desperately play some blitz chess with Hans. You know, I don't really care who it's against. But yeah, that's unfortunate. It seemed like a fun event. I think it would have gotten like a huge amount of hype.
Huge, yeah.
Which
people were getting very excited about it.
But
I was getting
not a huge surprise it didn't happen. Like that was my first instinct, and then I was convinced at some point that maybe it will actually happen. But first instinct turned out to be correct. Didn't pan out, and that's that.
I want to see matches. I want to see matches, and it seems again. I hope that the chess world will add. I'm not saying you should move into that direction solely, only have matches, but I think it's a good addition and it only makes sense. It's a 1v1 sport. It only makes sense to have matches, build some hype, build some rivalry, and get people interested.
But it's like, again, who are the matches between? Like, who is getting excited over?
It doesn't matter.
No, but it does matter.
Well, we have like four Hans versus the world.
No, I understand. Okay, Hans, he's going to be a polarizing figure. Some people will root against him. Some people will root for him. He has his fans. He has his detractors. Kramnik will be a polarizing figure because of all the recent stuff.
Hikaru versus Magnus was supposed to happen.
Okay, but now you're picking like, yes, a polarizing figure who, and also, I mean, maybe Hikaru is sort of a polarizing figure. At least that seems to be the case. And also they happen to be top three in the world. With
yes.
Magnus.
Yes.
So again, you're only suggesting one match to me, and it even fell through that one as well.
It probably has to start slow. Right now, we don't have the characters in the chess world, but if this kind of becomes a thing, I think the characters will be built up. Let's say will appear. Let's say even like 2500s, 2600s. You can build up. Let's say
a
match card. Where
yeah, but
you
the
have
thing
2500s.
Is, like, you're going to need, like, maybe you have Lawrence Trent against
and then you have a main
Greg
event.
Shahadi or something. Yeah, you can build them up because they're going to trash talk and play it up and so on.
People get excited
but
about that.
But if you have a match, again, I'm going to say some names. These aren't meant to, like, denigrate the players at all. They're great players. But if you have a match like Yu Yangyi against, I don't know, Yu Yangyi against Sugirov.
Okay.
Like, again,
strays.
No, but I'm not like using it. It's just that they're not like very notorious players, right?
Sure, that's the thing. You need to build.
It's not meant to be an insult, really, to either of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're great players, but nobody's gonna watch the match.
90%, 95% of the players in the chess world right now don't have
like I can
a marketable persona.
I mean, we had matches like we had this chess Kings. What was it called in St. Louis? Kings, Champion Kings Tour.
Champion Showdown.
Champion Showdown.
Yes.
And I was playing, like, okay, 2019. I was playing Hare Krishna. I don't know, Wesley was playing Lanier. Hikaru was playing Levant.
But there was no
Rapport was playing. Rapport was playing Shankland.
Yes, I remember those.
And these are actual, like, all top players. And what was the viewership? And that's, like, multiple matches. And then Magnus even plays Ding. Did you have, like, huge viewership for Magnus Ding?
Not so much.
Like, do you think that anyone's going to watch me against Pantala, even though we're both
if you start trash-talking Pantala, if you start, like, building up some sort of rivalry, yes.
Yeah, but the thing
is... Yeah, without rivalry, there's nothing. Not necessarily
like,
trash talk.
If the trash talk isn't genuine, if the people don't hate each other, it's going to look fake. And I don't hate Hare Krishna.
That's true.
And even like Hans and Vidit, they were trash talking. I was like, okay, this
is... that was weak. That was weak.
Because they don't hate each other. You need to actually have people...
Vidit is a very nice guy, yes. He doesn't play the heel.
But chess players don't really hate each other too much. And even if they do, they probably don't like say it publicly.
That's the thing.
Fighters, it's like...
We're in a very gentlemanly sport. I agree with you, and perhaps that's not well fitted.
It's also like tennis. It's like after a tennis match, these guys are like, oh yeah, he's the greatest ever and I respect him so much.
That's true.
You know, like, again, it's not a bad thing. It's like Alcaraz and Djokovic and they're afterwards, the loser is very gracious and the winner is very gracious and they both give speeches and press conferences.
Good point.
It's like chess. And in MMA you have, or boxing, you have the guys who, I don't know if they genuinely hate each other or they're just like testosterone through the roof.
Probably.
And they're just like going at each other's throats and But it's different. I mean, there you... Okay, that's a natural phenomenon.
But still, people are interested in tennis, right? People get attached to, let's say, a certain player.
Yeah, but not because...
How do you build that within the chess world?
But you'd have it in the chess world, too. It's like Alcaraz or Djokovic or Federer, they have their fans because they're the greats of all time. Or, or Nadal, they have millions and millions. The same with Messi or Ronaldo, right? Millions and millions of fans because they're great players. And the fact that they're gracious does not detract from them as players. But you don't need to have trash-talking 1v1 matchups. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's just a normal KO-style tournament, right? That you see in, like, the World Cup.
And you do get some tensions occasionally between the players.
Sometimes. Yes. But the same in chess, right? You'll have, like you have some chess controversy because of, let's say, some format disagreement, like we had recently. I don't want to talk about it again, but
let's not go into that again.
But it's like, okay, you have trying to think of something in tennis, because like very often these guys are also like giving points if there's like they'll say, okay, you know, it's your point in case there's some disagreement, right? Like Alcaraz very often does this. If there's some kind of dispute, he's not like fighting over the point. But there was this case with the Greek tennis player.
Ben Shelton, the American.
Oh, and Djokovic.
Who was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Djokovic.
Yeah, Djokovic got mad. I mean, okay, that was a bit of, yeah, yeah. Shelton is a young guy, and he was a bit, yeah, he's like, not exactly like Hans, but sort of, you know, a bit poking fun at the.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Djokovic poked back, and there was, but it was so minor.
And it wasn't them. I would assume they weren't actually offended. People just around the internet were offended.
They were probably a little bit pissed at each other. But there was, who's the Greek tennis player?
Tsitsipas.
Yes, Tsitsipas. And he was like, there was someone said that he was getting coaching or like taking very, very extended breaks, which weren't... weren't justified. I forget. There was some. There was
bathroom,
some like fight,
kind of like a bathroom controversy.
Yeah, and his father like was. His father was like, also very involved, and I don't know. There was something there, but again, minor stuff, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't think that like these 1v1 matches are going to take off suddenly. That's my feeling.
We'll see. Again, we need more characters in the chess world. So if you're an up-and-coming 2400, 2500, 2300, it doesn't really matter. Just build your persona on the internet. I think that's very important. But that's crucial.
There's from also like very respectful countries very often. All these talented kids.
You don't have to trash talk, actually. You actually don't have
India,
to trash talk.
From India, Uzbekistan. It's like very...
Just post. Just post on Instagram. You know, get following. I think that's crucial because that's how you attract sponsors. I'm actually very curious to see how things are going to develop after the Rapid and Blitz. I have a feeling that's going to be
huge. What Rapid and Blitz?
In New York. I think that's going to be a big event. I think that's going to be a big event.
I'm looking forward to it. I don't think it'll change things dramatically, but I'm looking forward to it. What do you think it'll change?
I think we're probably going to get some visibility as a sport, get some discussions with sponsors. I don't know exactly what's happening.
But there was a world championship in New York.
Yeah, yeah.
We were there, right? You were there as well.
Yes, I was.
But 2016.
I think the time is much more right now than it was in 2016. But we'll see. I mean, it is just, you know, this is my hope.
The New York scene, because a few years ago I was acquainted with it, in terms of, like, there's a corporate scene that's interested in chess.
Exactly.
There's billions and billions of dollars in the corporate world. I mean, trillions of dollars. And it wouldn't hurt them at all to give some money to chess, right? It would.
But they need to get something.
And they have some interest.
That's the thing.
Like in 2018, when I qualified, I did get interest from the corporate world in New York, and I did some stuff there in summer of 2018. And yeah, but they're like, if there's something that they're interested in, then they're willing to. But they have to be interested in it. Mm-hmm. And definitely, like a world championship match was enough to like. Awaken that interest a bit.
Yeah.
But just a tournament in New York, will it? I mean, they have their corporate chess league. There's things going on. A lot of these guys do play chess and have ties to the chess world. But yeah,
there's just the right discussions that need to happen. I mean, look.
I hope so.
Rolex, they sponsor tennis. They don't play with a Rolex on. They put it immediately after on.
Okay.
And they raise the thing, boom, Rolex.
You can't compare Huge. Chess and tennis. I mean, you just Huge. Can't.
You have to but be realistic a watch too. Company, a watch sponsorship is like the most well-fitted partnership that you could think of. Like yeah, chess players, chess, you chess can always small. See their hands.
Chess is still small.
That's the problem.
Of course, watches are like the most natural.
I mean, it's such a natural fit.
We even use a watch to play chess. I mean, we have yes. the clock. Right? So they, I mean, there's a lot of potential there. But if they don't have the interest, I mean, I got a in 2020 I got a deal with Intel, and it was about a year long. There were some people in one department who were interested, and so we made contact. We got some partnership going. And then at some point, the departments just shifted around in some way. Uh-huh, and uh-huh. those people went somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
And we lost our contact there.
And it fell apart? Or?
I mean, yeah, well, it just didn't get renewed. But it wasn't because they can't... I mean, this was like very little money.
Like,
I forget. I mean, it's in the tens of thousands, right? Mm-hmm. It's, which is significant for one single person. Like if you're a chess player, I sponsor you for 50 grand or 75 grand... That's like a very good deal. For a big company, it's literally, it's nothing. Absolutely yes. nothing. So nothing. They don't care about the money, and maybe it gives them a bit of good press. But they actually have to get the idea in their heads, and you have to actually make the contacts, and that's where the difficulty arises. So, yeah, can it happen? Sure. Will it happen? I don't know. I mean, I've seen sponsors in chess come and go, and sometimes they're... A lot of it relies usually on like one... benefactor, because the big companies very often they don't seem super interested in chess, or if they are, then they go to like chess.com and there's some collaboration with another big company.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
Yeah, with that, I think it's probably a good time to finish this one. We do have a buddy just trying to get in the frame right now. Maybe you guys will see it.
Don't scare it, or it may explode.
He's not gonna explode. You have to really scare them. I'm going to research that. Oh, by the way, this is actually, I want to talk to you about that. I was researching undetectable smart AR glasses. Ways to cheat.
Augmented reality?
Yes.
Okay.
Where you could see like stuff in your on your lens.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't find any, but I'm sure they exist.
If you want to cheat, I think there's easier ways than smart glasses.
But I'm going to do more research because I'm interested in that.
So if your online results start to skyrocket, you know, you found the way.
I don't have any online results because...
For now. Just wait.
I don't play online. But yes.
For now. It's
for now. Anyway, see you guys in the next one. Don't forget, like, subscribe, all the good stuff, and follow the Grand Chess Tour, Superbad Chess Classic. Until next time. Cheers.